Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
All right, welcome. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the show that broadcasts live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's also incidentally Fukushima irradiated, which is good for the economy because everybody has a part-time job now as an incandescent light bulb. My very special guest coming from the Trends Research Institute in, I think it's in New York City, is Gerald Celente from Trends Research. Gerald, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Vinny. Actually, we're from Colonial Kingston, about 2 hours north of New York City, the first capital of New York State, on the most historic corner in the United States, the only place on each corner where there's a stone building that predates the Revolution.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. Well, I've only got a short time with you here, about maybe 15, 17 minutes if we're pushing it there, so I don't want to waste it. I was wondering just exactly what your perspective is on what's happening inside the United States right now with regards to the economy and basically where it's actually headed. Because a lot of people have said it's heading for a massive global depression, and other people have said, oh, it's on the turnaround. What's your perspective?
Well, it's clearly, it's an interest rate rally. And that means that interest rates are now at record lows. And if you play back the clock, you've seen this play before. You go back to the panic of, the crash, the bursting of the Dow, the NASDAQ bubble at the dot-com boom when it collapsed in 2000. In 2001, following 9/11, the Fed chairman lowered interest rates to 40-year lows, and that created the housing bubble. They're doing the same thing now, not only in the United States. They're doing it in Europe. They're doing it in Japan. They're doing it in China. They're doing it all over the world. They're pumping up their economies with stimulus. Everybody knows this. And record low interest rates. So, for example, once upon a time, they used to encourage people to put money away for a rainy day. They called it savings. And you put it in the bank, and you got a return on your money with a higher interest rate. Now you put your money in the bank, you lose money. They give you back nothing. So it's forcing people to go into the equity markets. And then you go back, Vinny, to Davos meeting about a month ago, and the word from Davos with three letters, LBO, leverage buyouts. Why? Because money's so damn cheap. They're devaluing the currency. In the United States, for example, hey, you want to buy a new automobile? I got a deal for you, my cousin Vinny. I'm going to give you no interest rates because you're a nice guy. That's right. Step right up. Zero interest rates, Vinny. You can start paying me back. Bang, 60 months. How's that? Now drive away with this beauty. It's all yours. They're doing that up and down the line. Interest rates, for example, to buy a home. A residential mortgage, 15 years, locked in at 2.87%. Commercial loans, 3.25%. So what they're doing is they're juicing the economy with cheap money. In the United States, they call it quantitative easing. Isn't that a proper term? But not as proper as that term they have over there that Mario Draghi, the head of the European Central Bank, former head of the Goldman Sachs gang, European division, that's right, the vice chairman, they call it OMT, ongoing monetary transactions, I call it
OMG.
Yeah, you call it OMG after the whole thing goes down.
Well, then you call it WTF.
Yeah, that's right. No, that's WTF now, and later comes OMG.
Oh yes, let's get the chronology right here. Oh, yeah.
So that's what's going on.
Okay. So it's basically in the crapper, and I had this philosophy, and I don't know if it'll work. the reason why all this massive debt and cheap money exists is because they made it up out of thin air, right? Basically, they're pretending it exists. And I thought to myself, why don't we just pretend that it doesn't exist? You know, forgive all the debt. Would that set us right?
Actually, that's what's going to happen eventually, is they're going to debase the currency. So people are concerned about inflation. I don't see inflation coming. I see a devaluation of the currency. They're debasing the currencies. This is historical. They've never done anything like this before. But they've done something a little bit like it before. Let's play back the clock again. It was a thing called the crash of 1929. It was followed by the Great Depression. It was followed then by currency wars, and then trade wars, then world war. Fast forward, the panic of 08. The Great Depression. There's a depression going on. The prostitutes don't call it that. They call what's going on in Greece with 27% unemployment and people sleeping out in the streets and committing suicide and having nothing, no heat, losing everything that they own. They call that a recession. It's not a depression. What's going on in Spain? 27% unemployment. Yeah, people losing everything out in the streets, blowing their brains out. That's only a recession. It's not a depression. Portugal, Italy, you have on average in the Eurozone, among those countries, you have about 45% youth unemployment rate. This whole thing is going down, but they don't call it that. So now what's happened? You had a panic, a depression, you have currency wars. Listen to the words of the new prime minister of Japan, Abe. There's a currency war going on, and we're going to make it better. Tell you what we're going to do. We're going to devalue the yen 20% since he got into office and have the Bank of Japan keep printing cheap money like the United States, like Europe, like China, and like Europe. Then you listen to Guido Mantega. He's the finance minister of Brazil. There's a currency war going on. Listen to Mervyn King, the prince, the clown prince of the Bank of England. There's a currency war going on. Listen to Alex Verber, the head of UBS, former head of Deutsche Bank. There's a currency war going on. So you have the same thing repeating itself. And now trade wars are heating up, and then world war. We're seeing a replay of the past, and people are denying it. There's a war in Libya, there's a war in Syria, there's a war in Yemen, there's a war in Bahrain. There's class warfare throughout Europe. Look what's going on in Italy right now with Beppe Grillo throwing a monkey wrench into the corrupt parties of Bersani and Berlusconi. Look what's going on in Portugal last week. Hundreds of thousands of people taking to the streets a week before. Millions and millions of people taking to the streets in Spain. You have class warfare, real warfare, and now you have trade warfare, currency warfare. To us, it's very clear where it's all going. Oh, and I love those French. Hey, things getting tough? You need a little bit more dough. I got a plan for you. You can't get over the French Sudan trip. You know, the one that you guys were on since 1896 to 1960. Need some more gold? Go back into Mali. Yeah, they pulled out 50 tons of it last year, and it could be yours just for some slaughter and genocide, and you could get back in the red again. Or sounds the black like again, excuse me. Red with blood, black with money.
Sounds like a great deal if you happen to be a ruthless sociopathic scumbag.
Qualification, by the way, for every world leader. Yeah. Those are what you need to be to get ahead in the game.
Mm. It is a corrupt man's game. And this is another thing that I wanted to ask you, Gerald, as well. You're talking about how it's a currency war and a trade war and all of that. Do you understand who the factions are or who's winning? And second part of that, we're talking about the qualifications of scumbags getting into these political games, financiers, that kind of thing. I was wondering, you sort of used to be involved in this, and what got you out of it? Did you have some kind of big experience in your life, a revelation, if you were, that made you change direction, or...?
I found Jesus. No, what happened was I started growing up. I began my career as the, you won't find Jesus at the Vatican, I can tell you that right now. But anyway, I began my career by, I used to run political campaigns in Westchester County at a graduate school. And then I was the assistant to the secretary of the New York State Senate. And I designed and taught American politics and campaign technology at St. John's University. And then from there, I was a government affairs specialist for the chemical industry in D.C. for many years. And then what happened is, you know, this was in the late 70s. A lot of stuff was going on. And I, you know, started waking up to this whole thing and realized that, you know, I didn't want to do this anymore. And it wasn't worth the money to sell my soul. And I started growing up and doing a lot of other things to find my way, you know, learning how to meditate, taking, you know, I'm a close combat black belt in, for many years. So I started learning to get control of myself and finding out who I am. And I have an expression, you know, the motto of the Trends Research Institute, the Trends Journal, actually, our publication, is think for yourself. And so when I say what I'm saying, you know, don't believe me. This is the way I see things. Think for yourself. But to ask you, you know, how did I change? My definition of hell is taking that last breath, Vinny, and knowing that you BS'd yourself and you weren't the person who you said you were or could have been. So I don't want to end up like that. So I try to find the truth within myself.
And usually the thing that I find about people in your position who are of great success and intelligence minds is they contribute to society as a whole much, much more than the average person who simply goes to work and does their job changing tires or whatever. I mean, everybody contributes. But what I see you doing, in particular with all your radio and media appearances, is you're really donating a substantial portion of your time and expertise to actually make a real difference in the world so that people have accurate information.
Well, thank you. But it's really much, my objective is, and the objective of the Trends Journal and the work that we do, is for everybody to rise up to the greatest level they have within themselves. And when that happens, when the individual changes, then everything changes. So, for example, if you eat junk food and drink junk drinks, you know what you're going to look like and feel like. If you take in junk news, watch junk entertainment, and listen to junk music, you know where your mind is going to go. So what we're saying to people is that find the greatness within yourself. When you do that, then the whole game changes. You don't listen to morons, the sociopaths and psychopathic scumbags that you were referring to before. And you create the greatness within yourself. So when that happens to me, that's the way that everything changes. And by the way, all eyes and ears right now, in my belief, should be on Italy with the five-star movement, Beppe Grillo's five-star movement. And you notice how the media always refer to him as a comedian. Oh, yeah, like these other guys aren't buffoons and comedians. How about referring to Ronald Reagan as a grade B movie actor or Jimmy Carter, the peanut farmer that, you know, took the White House, or George Bush, the former baseball team owner, or I got one. How about Barack Obama, the failed community organizer? So what they do is they try to diminish the importance of what Grillo and his team are doing. But to me, that's the model to follow because it's not.
Could you explain what that model actually is? Because I've not even heard of the five-star movement.
Wow. You see, that's what I mean. It's not making the news. He just disrupted the entire Italian government. His party, the Five Star Movement, got more votes than any other single party. It only began in 2009. He's a brilliant satirist. And what he's done is he's exposed the corruption and the stupidity and incompetence of the ruling class. And how the whole system has to change. He did it with the internet. He refused to go on any of those political talk shows like Meet the Prestitutes like we have here in the States or go on any television. He did it all over the internet, and his following are all mostly young people. And the movement is about not belonging to any party, but having a clear direction of where you're going. They're concerned about the environment. They're concerned about equality. They don't want to get involved in foreign entanglements. The things that the transportation that really works rather than the crap that they got going on now. So the five-star movement is a model to follow because it has a direct focus. It's outside of the mainstream. They got like something like 118 seats in the parliament, 26% of the votes compared to about 30% each for the other two parties. And Mario Monti, three-card Monti, the head, the technocrat that's heading the Italian government now, he only got 10% of the vote. So it's not a protest. Protests don't work. Movements do. And that's what we're writing about, by the way. It's going to be a huge focus of the Spring Trends Journal that will be out in mid-April. This is the way of the future. The ruling parties are no longer viable. Oh, you know what the big one of his is? Direct democracy. Let the people vote. He wants the Italian people to vote whether or not to stay with the euro. I was in Italy in 2002 when the euro came online. It was about 86 cents to the dollar. Now it's about 130 cents to the dollar. The people are suffering under inflation. One size doesn't fit all. The only thing that this is doing is making the banks more capable by having one eurozone currency of ripping everybody off simultaneously. So direct democracy to me is the answer.
All right. Well, Gerald, unfortunately, we're coming to the end of the segment, so I wanted to tell you a joke that's based on you. I remember seeing you talk about how to get a good employee on this college conspiracy documentary. So what do you call an employee who used to work for Gerald Celente? An excellente employee. Thank you very much for coming on the show with us. I don't know if you have any more time to stay with us, but, you know, I think you're a busy man, so we'll let you go if you can.
Well, thanks a lot, Vinny. Until the next time, thanks for having me on.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much indeed. We'll see you after the break, ladies and gentlemen.
Alone against your mad, deadly, worldwide conspiratorial gangster computer god communism with wall-to-wall deadly gangster protection.
Welcome back.
Sworn conspirators, murder incorporated.
Welcome back, everybody, to the show that's all about deadly gangster protection. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And incidentally, the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. And I keep forgetting to plug it, and I should probably plug it a hell of a lot more. RealGorillaMedia.com. That's RealGorillaMedia.com, where we're getting together a bunch of really credible and the incredible activists from around the world to contribute so that you can go to one website, RealGorillaMedia.com, and see a whole bunch of very credible people talking about all bunches of eclectic different arguments and stories and what have you, and then go straight to their websites. And there's also a little option there where you can donate to those people. They don't really do anything, okay? The only reason why they're part of Guerrilla Media is because they don't need it, all right? They're just doing it anyway. And that's how I started. That's how many other people started. And we want to keep that going. And the only reason it really is there is so that people can come to one place to see all these different awesome people right there and also be able to donate to them to help them keep doing what they're doing. And there is no charge for this. And we're not, you know, tyrannical scumbags and try to attack people and foster a whole bunch of infighting. speaking of infighting, I had a revelation about that today. What was I talking about? If it's infighting for no reason, I think it's fruitless. If it's infighting that goes on forever, it's pointless. If it's telling the truth so people know who someone really is so they're not deceived, then it has its place. Beyond that, I don't engage in it. My very special guest is the wonderful, fabulous, and indomitable, and inimitable Suzanne Poser. Welcome to the program.
Hello, everyone.
Does you have some news stories for us today, or is there something else on your mind?
I do. Well, I wanted to read the definition of communism because we tend to throw words out like we know what they mean, and a lot of people use them in the wrong way, which is a tactic of communism, by the way, in order to redefine it so that the populace who are uneducated will then say, yeah, that's what it means. But that's really not what it means. Communism is a political theory derived from Karl Marx, advocating class war and leading to a society in which all property is publicly owned. And it is owned by the government. So everyone is a slave of the government after the government takes over. Everyone's equal on an equal playing field, but it's them up at the top and you down at the bottom. That's what real communism is. It's not because you don't like someone or because you don't agree with their ideals. That's like when in the media now, if you disagree with anything, if you disagree with Zionist takeover, if you disagree with Obama regime, you're a racist. That's the catch-all. They just say you're racist. Now, what is racism? Racism is when you differentiate from a person based on their race and not on the person. So they take a word and they redefine it and they spin it and spin it, and then people regurgitate it, and then the idiots clamor around and go, yeah, communism, he's a communist, he's a racist. Really, nobody knows what they're talking about. And so you have an idiot leading a legion of idiots. And where are we going toward? Anyone seen the movie Idiocracy? That's where we're headed.
Yeah. What was it? Albert Einstein once said that there's only two infinite things, the universe and human stupidity. And I'm not too sure about the former.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And thanks to indoctrination, everybody's becoming dumber and dumber.
Yeah, I know. It's like a Jeff Daniels, Jim Carrey movie out there in real life, in real time, live streamed. It's out of control, man. I was just wondering, is there any, like, what do they call it, studies that are being done on human intelligence, like just in general, a general study of human intelligence to determine whether or not people today are dumber than people yesterday? As it were.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be interesting to find out.
Actually, the IQ test was derived out of eugenics. They wanted to be able to decide whether or not people had a certain mental capability. And if you fell under a certain line or you fell into a certain bracket, then you were labeled into that. And then they would use eugenics in order to, or the ideology of eugenics, in order to place you into that box and label you. And so you could never achieve beyond that. Now, I have two small children and I always use them as an example because they're sponges. My son, I've started teaching him on a third grade level now at home because he's beyond first and second grade at 6 years old because he is able to take in information. He may not be able to process it in the same way because he doesn't understand consequence and he has no point of reference because he's only got the last 5 years to go back and look upon. However, he is able to understand concepts and he is able to take it forward to the next level. So why not keep encouraging and keep introducing more challenging information in order for him to build up, like you do your immune system by getting sick, to build up this ability of cognizance so that he can continue that throughout his life. And in the indoctrination stations, they say when you're in first grade, you're only allowed to learn this. We can't take you beyond. You'll never understand it. Wait till next year. Here's your little certificate. Yay. Now you can graduate on to the next level of understanding.
Sounds like a Freemasonic indoctrination program.
That's exactly what it is. So the IQ test is made to figure out how stupid someone is and keep them at that level.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was tested for IQ at an early age and was continued, and my mother was obsessed with IQ and continued to test me, and I always tested in superior or above levels. I think the last time I was tested, it was 143.
Yeah. Maybe we should develop a specific IQ test for truthers called the David IQ test.
Well, you know, I had a conversation with someone today, and I talked about it a little bit on my show. It really upset me because this person did not want to be associated with a radio station who had other ideas like aliens or conspiracy theory. And so I was saying to him, well, do you understand what the foreclosures are all about? Do you understand that these technocrats, that is a conspiracy, right? They are taking our homes because they want sovereign debt. And the easiest way to do it is to do it through the mortgage-backed securities, because one out of three registered gun owners in America are homeowners, or one out of three homeowners are registered gun owners. So you can't just do what you're doing in Greece and Spain over here. You got to do it a little bit sneakier. So you buy the land back from the mortgage-backed security, from the banks who securitize them on the global market. And that's how you acquire all this land out from under people. But just to remind people, like, I was on a show on Sunday with a friend of mine, and unless you own mineral rights, you never even owned the land to begin with. You were a renter. That mortgage is a rental agreement. And people don't realize this.
Even if you own your home, the government still owns the land beneath it and can force you off your private property at any time they all frickin' please.
Yes. And they go through tactics like eminent domain, but this is all just pleasantries, really. I mean, it's not very pleasant, but it is pleasantries. They own the physical land underneath. They have the mineral rights. Since you don't have mineral rights, you don't own your land. It came up in conversation that go look at the title to your car. And it might be this way for you, Vinny, in New Zealand. But I have a certificate of title to my car. And I bought my car. I don't have car payments. But that certificate of title does not mean that I own my car. I don't even own my car. They can repossess.
We don't own anything.
No.
Well, hold on. You defined communism earlier as the government owning everything and everybody owning nothing. Frank, we're already living under it.
Exactly. And then you've got people who don't understand what a word means, who don't do research, who don't learn about anything other than what's popular and what's sensational. And then they're telling you what the definition of a word means, and it's incredibly complicated.
Well, and here's another thing. That's very interesting to me. My mate was saying, oh, I wonder if he's COINTELPRO, I wonder if she's COINTELPRO. And the word COINTELPRO gets thrown around a lot. And I said to him, bro, do you know what the word COINTELPRO actually means? He's like, something intelligence propaganda, I don't know. And I said, counter intelligence program, okay? The definition of which is you are hired by the government to do one of three things: to demonize a particular person to rob them of their support, or to kill that person to make sure that, hey, they can't do anything more, or to simply muddy the waters by acting like somebody who's very similar to them but say different things so that people don't know the difference between the truth and a lie anymore. Right?
Yes.
People don't know the difference. People don't know the definitions. And that's why these things get thrown around all the time. And that's why I'm really kind of frustrated with people accusing each other of being COINTELPRO. It's like the first thing that they go to. It's like, well, hold on a second. You know, take some critical analysis for a moment. Have you seen them take a government paycheck for their activities? No. Have you seen them specifically be caught out in a lie that they deny, even though the evidence is undeniable? No. Then they're not COINTELPRO. Have you seen them kill anybody? No. Well, then they're not COINTELPRO. Okay?
And that's the biggest problem. One of the biggest problems in this movement is that we think it's cool to throw out these phrases that we don't know what they mean. And they have military applications. And unless you are in a military family or have served in the military, you don't even come close to understanding what the actual definition is. It's like in legalese, as being a paralegal by trade, when you go and learn how to speak legalese, it's learning a whole new language. The word walking down, the phrase walking down the street means something completely different in a court of law than it does in everyday life. And so the average person who is just realizing, hey, something's not right around here. I think I'm being followed. Wait a minute, there's a drone over my head. Wait a minute, there's a chemtrail. Wait a minute, I just ordered a burrito from Taco Bell and it smells like horse. What's going on here? And people just don't realize when they go to do even a minimal amount of research, they get bombarded with all of these words and phrases that have been, like you said, tossed around so much that they don't mean what they actually meant when they were created. And therefore, they have a new definition. And that is disinformation.
Well, see, and also this makes me a little bit freaked out. Maybe I'm engaging in disinformation without knowing it in some cases, because like I'll be accused of being a counterintelligence agent when I say something, and then somebody will present contrary evidence to what I've said. And then I look at that contrary evidence and go, oh my God, they're right. I was wrong. I wasn't engaging in disinformation. I wasn't a government agent. I was wrong. Okay. And whether or not somebody's wrong seems to not even factor into people's reckoning these days. It's simply straight away accuse them of working for the other side.
Yes, because that way they can people corral around something like the infotainers. You know, I keep using James Freeland started that little phrase, and I told him that I've stolen it from him, and he laughed and said it was okay because it fits it so perfectly. It's entertainment. It's not meant to be informative. It's not meant to take you to a new level of understanding. It's meant to entertain you. And we have a fascination with being frightened. That's why scary movies are so popular. And when you have an infotainer in the truth movement, they appeal to your fear. Because once you realize that something's wrong, you're afraid. If something's wrong, how do I fix it? And how much of it is wrong? And wait a minute, every time I turn around, everything is wrong. And all of a sudden, you're a deer caught in the headlights. You're not doing anything. You're not changing anything. You're just scared. And you're looking out your blinds thinking that the government is going to knock in your door. And it's not going to happen.
Yeah. And the other thing is, you know, people will look at other people that they admire and say, oh my God, this person's got a wonderful radio show. I wish I could be like him. You know, you can't be like these other people that you've seen before. Okay. It's like Gerald Celente was saying in the previous segment, you've got to figure out your own individual innate abilities, and that will actually lead you on to your positive course through life. Nobody else can tell you how to live your life. Nobody else can figure things out for you. You have to figure them out for yourself. Take some personal responsibility. Stop relying on others to be your translators and interpreters. Learn to speak the language.
Exactly. And that's why that's the biggest thing about Real Guerrilla Media. These people are actually getting up and doing something, and it should be an inspiration for yourself. That's why I had Dan Johnson from Panda Unite, because I want people to actually get up and do something. Now that we know that something's wrong, and you don't have to know every minute detail, but you know something's wrong, get up and do something.
Yeah, it's just that simple. And it's not like it's going to be really, really difficult to do something either, is it? You simply have to do more than nothing. You know, and do a little more of more than nothing each day. And by the end of it, hey, you realize, oh my God, I didn't spend my life doing nothing, working for sociopathic criminal scumbags that frack up the planet. I was actually doing the right thing for a change and thinking for myself. That makes me feel better, even though I'm in a FEMA camp. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
Yeah! On December 16th, 1961, the world turned upside down, then inside out, and I was born screaming in America. It was the tail end of the American dream, just before we lost our innocence irrevocably, when the TV eye brought the horror of our lives into our homes for all to see. I was told when I grew up I could be anything I wanted. A fireman, a policeman, a doctor, even president, it seems. And for the first time in the history of mankind, something new called an astronaut. But like many kids growing up on a steady diet of Westerns, I always wanted to be the cowboy hero. That lone voice in the wilderness, fighting corruption and evil wherever I found it, and standing for freedom, truth, and justice. And in my heart of hearts, I still track the remnants of that dream wherever I go in my never-ending ride into the setting sun.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest with me here for this final segment of the first hour is Suzanne Posel. I was just thinking about that recording by Bill Hicks, seeing himself as the cowboy hero standing for freedom, truth, and justice. And I was thinking about how freedom is not the same thing as truth, and justice is not the same thing as freedom. And how they're really, really different, yet they're all interrelated. You know what I'm saying? Without freedom, you can't really operate with any truth or any justice, can you? Because you don't have the freedom to speak the truth, nor do you have the freedom to punish the evil. And without justice, it doesn't matter how much freedom to speak you have, because you'll never get a fair deal. And without truth, it doesn't matter how much freedom or justice you have, because it's all a lie anyway.
Absolutely. You know, when I was a kid, I listened to Bill Hicks, and I watched his shows like on HBO. I don't know if HBO still exists, but I was like 13, and I thought this guy was incredible. And I had no idea. I was priming myself for what I'm doing today. I had no idea. I understand. I go back and watch It's Just a Ride, that clip that you... And I have in my quotes on Facebook, the world is like a ride on an amusement park, and the whole thing that he says, it's absolutely true. I wish that I had understood back then, knowing what I know now, what he was saying. Like George Carlin, toward the end of his life, he just came out and said it. The real owners of this country, they own you. It's a big club, and you're not in it. And he spent his whole career fighting against political correctness and what we should and shouldn't do based on social memes. And I now that I know what I know, and having listened to him most of my life because my father's a big fan of his, and Bill Hicks as well, I understand that regardless of where you are on what side, you know, we all understand that this something's not right. And just because, like Bill Hicks said, look at these the brow of you know, on my face, you know, I look at
my furrows of worry.
Yes, all of this means something. Look at my big bank account. No, it doesn't mean anything. It means something because somebody said so, and that guy who said so, he's a douchebag. Yeah. And he shouldn't be dictating whether or not you're worth something.
Yeah, nobody should be able to judge what other people's value is. I mean, it's like I found myself doing it, you know, shamefully, and I admit this. I found myself judging people and saying that they ain't got no potential or they got no abilities or whatever. And then I was like, stop, whoa, hold on a second here. Just because somebody hasn't done anything yet doesn't mean they'll never do anything, okay? It all comes down, like they say in The Matrix, to a choice between the blue pill or the red pill. And it's only once people are really given that choice, once they've got the information that just kind of says, oh, hold on, there's something really, really wrong here, and they make a choice to do nothing about it, to take the blue pill, to go down that road that they know exactly where it ends, that's the moment when they've really decided whether or not they are the ones who will or won't do anything. It's not for anybody else to decide what your future is or what your potential is. It's up to you to decide. That's what I've found.
Right. That's why leaders and idolization of people in this movement is so dangerous, because it is a personal choice. Like you've said in other broadcasts, nobody held a gun to my head and made me watch 100 documentaries. I chose to watch them. And yes, I was sitting there watching a documentary and I realized that it was all fake. Nobody told me to watch that documentary. Maybe someone encourages you to look at something, but you in the end are the person who sits down and reads that article or that book or the documentary or goes to that meeting or whatever it is. And it's in your mind that it clicks and the light goes on. It doesn't happen outside of you. It's all internal. And unfortunately, it doesn't remain that way. Because when we move from the mainstream to the alternative, we still have this idea that we need to idolize people. We idolize the musicians and the people who write books and the people who show up in movies. And we take that same mode of thinking and we move it to the alternative media and idolize the big names in the alternative media because we think that they have something that we don't.
Well, again, it comes down to belief in yourself. And if you don't have any belief in yourself, you're messed up, man. And somebody must have been playing with you. And I get really concerned. And I don't know. I feel guilty that I've actually got a radio show and I can speak about this because so many people really, really want that. And a lot of people have asked me to, how did I get where I am? And I've told them. I went out in the streets, man. I protested, I filmed, I edited, I uploaded for years. I did the first 6 months as a co-host on somebody else's show on American Freedom Radio from 3 till 5 o'clock in the morning because I was willing to get up that early because I cared enough and I had a partner who was willing to not only emotionally support me, but also to fully put up with the interruption and the massive strain that it puts on your relationship and your life as a result, okay? And when people know just what it takes, they choose to just do nothing.
Absolutely. That's really sad. I have the same thing. I do this 7 days a week. I do this into all hours of the night. I have to set up a schedule because my children need my attention, and so does my husband. And I'm still the one cooking and cleaning and taking care of the house and making sure all the bills get paid. So I have 17 jobs that I do. And I still put out articles and I still show up on radio shows and I still do my own show. Because this is that important. Like I was talking about with Dan from Panda Unite today. If liberty has no consequence to you, there's something wrong. You're taking this for granted. It can all go away in a matter of seconds. Just ask anyone from World War II whether or not they felt comfortable walking down the street without their papers. And then you will know that we're just a hop, skip, and a jump away from that.
Yeah. We're dangerously close. We're on a razor's edge. But we can win. And this is something that people don't realize. So many feel paralyzed by the fear that you feel. Yes, there's drones. Yes, there's MK Ultra mind control programs and assassins. Yes, there's poison in the water. Yes, they're spraying poison in the air. Yes, yes, yes to all of this. But guess what? You are still alive and it ain't over yet. And we can win so long as we're not yet defeated. Do you get it? It's not that hard. Just don't do nothing. And if you are literally paralyzed because of your other situations and other responsibilities, somebody else said to me, you know, Vinny, it's all very well for you to ask for donations, but there's hardworking people out there who have children and they have people who are disabled that they have to look after and their families and things like that. I'm very sympathetic to that. Okay? But if you don't support people like me, and I'm not saying support me or me only, I'm just saying don't do nothing. If you physically can't do something, then support somebody who is physically doing something. Do you see what I'm saying? That way you're at least contributing in some way. And I received a decent-sized donation from a person named James yesterday, and it nearly brought me to tears. I was like, wow, somebody actually really, really wants to protect me and help me do what I'm doing. And it was incredibly humbling, you know. Other people do million-dollar deals every day, and they don't think twice about it. Just somebody giving me a few hundred bucks is overwhelming to me, because I know that it comes from an individual who is willing to contribute in such a massive way that I'm unable to do myself.
I have the same thing. I'm always grateful. And I write, my husband and I both independently write emails and actually speak to these people. I've actually got some of my audience, I give them my cell phone number and we talk on a consistently regular basis. Because these are I'm just a real person just like you. I just happen to have a website and I'm on the other end of this radio, this microphone, and you're listening to me. But I am the same as you. You can be me. You can do whatever you're good at. You can apply that to this movement and perform a function so that we can stop all of this. Like you said, we have the ability, like you mentioned to Gerald Celente, well, if it's made out of nothing, then let's just pretend it doesn't exist. And then it won't exist.
Yeah. Well, I've always found that the most complicated problems have the most simple solutions. And again, I want to reiterate, we can win. We will win, provided everybody recognizes that something is required of them, and they are required to do anything it takes in order to accomplish victory over tyranny. If you want freedom, you must fight for it. There is some good in this world, and it is worth fighting for. Suzanne Posel from Occupy Corporatism, thank you very much for coming on the show. And we'll be right back next hour, ladies and gentlemen, at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. Welcome back. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the daily dose of, you know, the lighter side of genocide, a little bit of conspiracy, a little bit of comedy. Because, hey, look, everything's so freaking scary. If you don't have a coping mechanism, like cackling, for instance, how the heck are you going to deal with it? Really? Speaking of cackling, there's my very special guest.
Oh, sorry.
Heather.
I didn't know I was on mute.
Oh, well, it matters not. A cackle is a great introduction, methinks. So welcome.
Hi, Vinny. Hey, can I speak to Suzanne? I don't know if she's still on the. Is she still there? Or
no, she's not. But I'll pass on the message if you broadcast it on air. No worries.
Right. Hi, Suzanne. I would like to just thank you for setting such a great example for all mothers around the world. The reason we do this is for our children, and as a mom, I understand what you go through, and I appreciate your integrity. Both you and Vinny are just outstanding examples for all of us. So thank you. How are you doing, Vinny?
Well, you know, somewhat fabulous is my standard response, and quite frankly, I feel like I'm sort of high, you know, because I interviewed Gerald Celente earlier, and I was like, oh my god, that's awesome.
Yeah, I missed that. I'll have to go back and listen to it. While I'm thanking people, thank you, Sarah. Right?
Oh yeah.
I mean, that's who deserves the thank you. I mean, she's out there working for all of us.
Yeah, well, she does a really hard job, and like I'm a 6'4" burly guy, and
yeah,
I physically would be a great challenge to do the gardening work that she does. It's actually really, really physical work.
She's big time. You're lucky. I don't know how you got so lucky. Well, you deserve it. You're a good guy.
Yeah. Well, we actually got met being pimped out. Like, I was interested in this girl who was a friend of Sarah's. And then she didn't like me, though, so she invited me round to her house, and Sarah was there as well, and she got us both drunk, and we hooked up, and the first night we met, we started living together and haven't broken up since, you know? Like, that was it, just kind of like love it first at first sleep.
Yeah. Oh, God, you're so funny. You know, thank you, Sarah. Just, if she's listening... please, I mean that from the bottom of my heart. So before you,
before you say that, she never listens to the show. She hates my radio voice, and she hates my singing voice even more.
Oh, I like your singing. You're pretty good. It's kind of like stunning at first when you start, because it's kind of like an unexpected singing voice that you have. But I like it. It's Sarah. Poor Sarah. Oh my God. The hell that. No,
There's been times when I've been playing one of my songs and she walks into the house, you know, home from where she's going, Vinny, for goodness sake, turn it off.
Right.
She
probably says other stuff that's not allowed on FCC, right?
Yeah. Like, you know how some people say, oh, hate's too strong a word. In this instance, no, it's not.
Oh, I, my poor husband, I hate on him all the time, too. While I'm at it, my husband, if you're listening, which you're not because you're a dead asleep, stupid, fat, pig American watching football, so you're never going to hear this, but
it's
I love
a bit
you.
Harsh.
And what'd you say, Vinny?
Well, that's a bit harsh.
It's nothing I haven't said to his face before. I mean, but like you say, you can't wake people up. They just have to wake up on their own, and it's just this. He's a hard one. So anyway, at least like Sarah looks at the movies and like Kim Kardashian's Masonic floor and recognizes it. You know what I mean? She gets that. Like if I tried to point that out to my husband, he'd put me in the loony bin immediately.
Yeah, it was really funny. Like Sarah, every now and again, Vinny, look at the all-seeing eye pyramid on his head. I go, I love it when my baby notices the Illuminati symbolism.
That's my baby. That's awesome. All right, I know you know, I'm just going to do it for you. Tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is you do. Okay. This isn't about who I am or what I have done. I need to get a message out. That's very important. You know, I'm trying to transcend the ego thing, right? We all have to work on that. Let's just say that now I'm getting nervous. I've been through hell dodging bullets all of my life. But what I will say is I am a member of the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants. And I have a question for you, Vinny. This is serious.
Mm-hmm.
Ready? Do you want to defeat the scumbags, or do you want to just sit around and bitch about them on the radio? I mean, do we want to really do this?
You know what? I honestly don't want to fight. I don't even want to be doing this radio show. I don't want to be doing any of it. I'm doing it because I have to.
Right. Because now you're dependent on the income, you mean?
No, I do it because I don't have a choice. I say what the hell's the point in trying to work in a slave job that accomplishes nothing and does no good to anybody and inspires nobody. I have this responsibility now, and I feel obligated to do it. And I understand that there's not a whole lot of fun to be had in this movement, and I try to inject that unique little bit of, you know, humor and hilarity and comedy into it. I'm sort of like, I'm not the frontline kind of guy anymore, like going out to the scumbags trying to defeat them and whatever. I'm more like the backline kind of person, you know, the person who patches you up and heals you after you come back from the front line. You know what I'm saying? Like, yes. I've got my part to play.
Yes. Good for you. Okay.
But the answer is ultimately yes. I want these people frickin' defeated.
Okay, then can I speak to your audience for a minute?
No, it's illegal.
That's my audience. All right. Seriously, I would like to just speak directly to my colleagues and members of the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants. If everyone does what I'm going to suggest, then we, the people, can take over their luxurious underground spas and hotels and throw a big global party. I will personally promise, as a member of the AICPA, I will personally reconcile all the intra-country accounts and make sure it all ties. You guys know I crush that. That's what I do. I'm good at it, and I will take that responsibility on. I will make sure the accounts balance at the end. We have to first invert the pyramid and take our planet back from the bankers.
Are you talking about using a bit of creative accounting to seize all the mega bankers' wealth?
Yes, I am.
Well, that really ties into what I was talking with Gerald Celente. You know how they made up all this debt and it doesn't really exist? Well, if we pretend that it doesn't actually exist, then problem solved. And I think all these bankers, they got all their wealth because of fraud and BS. So if we pretend that all their fraud and BS and wealth doesn't exist anymore, problem solved again.
Yes. So you beat me to the punch. Now, can I explain what all that really means? Let me talk to the accountants, though, for a minute. Accountants understand that we are here now witnessing the final roll-up of all global corporations. So we've got to get it done this year. Let's work ethically out in the open and from the inside of our corporate accounting offices to do the right thing. Okay, here we go. So quick history lesson for non-accountants listening. The modern double entry bookkeeping system was first, codified in the 15th century or something by scumbag kings and queens of that time. They're the ones who changed the natural law equation from having assets equal equity to assets equals liability plus equity. Just like you said, we made it all up. A double entry accounting system is basically a bunch of rules for recording financial information in a system in which every transaction or event changes at least two different general ledger accounts, with one side of the transaction being called a debit and the other side of the transaction being called a credit. So in deciding which account has to be debited and which account has to be credited, the golden rule of accounting is supposed to be used. So this is accomplished using the equation, like I said, that they changed and inserted, the liability in assets equals equity. It's supposed to basically serve as an error detection tool. If at any point the sum of all debits for all the accounts don't equal all the corresponding sum of the credits for all the other accounts, we're supposed to call it out. So it follows that the sum of debits and the sum of credits must be equal in value. The problem, Vinny, is that they messed up the equation by inserting the liability loophole. Just like, I'm sorry I missed you talking with Celente earlier, but they created the liability loophole so they can just, do whatever they want and rob the people of all their energy before natural law catches up to them. And I think that it's close. I think that natural law is catching up. So what does this all mean? Are we supposed to, can you like stop me if we're about to go, you're going to stop me if we're going to break, right? So I don't just bore you. Okay. Are you bored yet? Are you tuned out yet?
Well, I'm still waiting for the crunch to come. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. So the equity is the sweat, just pure sweat part of the equation. Liability is debt. Like you said, it's all baloney. Listen, these guys are going to be forced. The new accounting equation is simply going to have to be assets equals equity. So people of China, India, Russia, Africa, and Brazil are under the impression that they've been doing the sweating on the westernized banking system world's behalf for the last 100 years since the Federal Reserve's inception. Okay? So that's the globalist justification for the planned collapse of Japan, which is already, I mean, they already Fukushima'd them, right? So they're gone. Because, see, they went to the Western banking system, right? They went with the liability loophole. So, you know, USA is basically next. And I wish I could, I don't want to just throw Australia and New Zealand in there because I can't, I don't know. I know a lot about Japan and
oh, we're already in there. Look at it this way. You walk into the Reserve Bank of New Zealand office and behind the front desk on the wall is a giant red shield. What does Rothschild mean in German? It means red shield, doesn't it? We're already in there. Don't worry.
Oh yeah, and they earthquaked you guys, didn't they? In Christchurch.
Oh yeah, we had umpteen different HAARP related reports and things of that nature going on in that day. All have been confirmed. And if anybody wants to like look at that, just search HAARP on my YouTube channel. There should be an interview in there with Ben Vidgen, I think, to sort you up in that regard. But yes, I'm sorry, Heather, continue.
Yeah, okay. So back to members of the AICPA. Listen up. The reason that the elite think that their actions are justifiable is because they have the masses believing in their fraudulent, backwards debits and credit system. So if we are all consenting to this, then they win. So we as ethical accountants have to invert the pyramid from the inside in a kind, ethical way.
So you're talking about, it's kind of like you're starting an organization called Accountants for Accountability.
There you go. There you go. Yeah, because what I'm going to do is basically send this to all my accounting friends in the United States, and I have a lot of them. You know what I mean? So this is my way of talking to all of them at once, on a show, on an ethical show that you know I believe in. I mean, I've been listening to you forever, and I love you, and I appreciate you, and anyway, so we as accountants basically have to stop cooking the books for the elite bankers. So here's what we do: we stop hiding debits in the GL accounts that are liability accounts. Debits belong on the asset side. If your boss tries to tell you to shove debits on the liability side of the balance sheet, say, no, I won't do it. You make that journal entry. Don't do it anymore, guys. We're not going to do it. We're going to bring in the accounting equation the right way. And we're going to make sure that the American people are not set under the bus because the elite, you know, tried to warn them and they were too asleep to realize what was happening. It's not their fault, you guys. Everything starts with you, okay? You have to be the change that you want to see out in the world. So you stop cooking the books, basically. Okay, we know what goes on with the auditors. We know it's at the top, you know, at the end of the day, it's the big boys club in Israel. They all report to Israel and the Mormons. God, I hope I don't get shot for saying. Oops.
I think I've said worse on this show.
Oh. So stop hiding debits in GL accounts that are liability accounts, guys. The masses think that when their bank account is credited, they're getting paid. But we know it's really the other way around. Cash accounts are increased with debits, not credits. It's all upside down. So that's what, see, Vinny, you know, we bankers, they call credits and debits, they reversed it. They reverse natural law. Get it?
Oh, that's interesting. Hey, Heather, we're coming up to break now. We've got you for the full hour. And I want you to define for me after the break about this whole credit versus debit thing and how they've actually reversed it. And I assume it's a very simple process. Most scams are quite simple. Otherwise, yes, that just wouldn't work. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Don't you go touching that dial.
that's all about organized crime and creative accounting so that we can take control of the United States and every other piece of crap country out there for the benefit of our prime sinisters, our El Presidentes, and Rothschild banking scum. Welcome back to my very special guest, Heather, as well.
Hi.
Yeah.
Hey.
Now, defining creative accounting, credits and debits. Could you define what a credit is, what a debit is, and how the two have been mixed up by the bankers?
Okay, so, do you want me to go over the equation again? Because the natural law equation, right, the universal natural law, if you're going to be, you know, in the business of money, okay, and have a balanced ledger, you need the debits and the credits to always equal, not even off by a penny. They always need to equal. Okay? I probably didn't explain it very well the first time. The double entry bookkeeping system, it is my understanding that before the 15th century was honest, per se. It was debits equaled credits, right? What they did, what the bankers did, basically, in the 15th century and then in 1913 when Federal Reserve came along, is the credit side of the equation was expanded to include debt in addition to equity. That's fraudulent.
That's usury, isn't it?
Yes. Did you get my email about usury being against the Muslim religion?
Well, usury is against New Zealand law as well. I looked up the legislation myself, and it's actually illegal in New Zealand. And yet, it's rampant.
No kidding. No kidding. Absolutely. So, hey, you know what? I've got this on my mind. Can I just get a little bit of advice? Any of your listeners are new to this NWO stuff. It can be really scary, guys. The rabbit hole is so deep, and it's sometimes it's traumatizing. It's, you know, don't get too dependent on the internet and get emotionally involved with people you don't know face to face. It's very hard not to get close with awake people across the globe. But if they take the internet down, all you're going to be left with is your local community and your family. So just keep that in mind. It's hard. I know because, you know, we find each other and we want to talk about all this crazy stuff. But if you can't look a person in the eye, then it's just hard to trust them because we don't know what they're going to throw at us, right? We don't know what.
I take a very carte blanche approach. I trust everybody until they violate my trust.
Right, right. And, you know, hey, okay, we need to be a little bit easy on the hot-blooded Italian. Look, he just learned about Satanism, like, literally 2 days ago. He's, like, way behind you, my friend Vinny. We have to have empathy and sympathy. He just doesn't get it yet. When he gets it, he'll understand, you know, what happened. But I'm very intuitive. I know what goes on behind the scenes. I'm kind of... I just feel bad for all parties involved. I think everyone is a good, genuine person with integrity. He just needs to learn not to play as dirty. You know what I mean? So we just have to be patient. Your attitude is wonderful. I mean, you're doing exactly what you need to be doing. So thank you. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Okay.
Could we change the topic, please?
Yes, because otherwise I'm really going to get shot, right? I'm sorry. You want to talk about what my friend gave her child for lunch the other day? So I went to visit my friend who just had a baby, her fourth child, and she lives in a pretty good sized mansion. Her husband, he's in the Air Force. He's you know, not, he's by default, not his, he's a great person, he's a great father and a great husband, you know, but he's working for the bad guys in the military, right? So I went to her house the other day, and her house is a mess because the kids aren't being fed properly because she's sitting on that damn Facebook all day long, just worried about, you know, whatever she's worried of, you know, Facebook propaganda, what, I don't know, what, Kim Kardashian, I don't know what they're talking about on Facebook, but her daughter said to her mom, "Mommy, my stomach hurts." So I asked my friend, "What's wrong with her stomach?" She goes, "Well, she has, you know, plumbing issues, and we went to the doctor, and they basically told us there's nothing we can do except for change her diet to, you know, natural foods, no fried foods, no mac and cheese, no Chick-fil-A." And she was, like, mad about it. She's like, "What am I supposed to feed her? She won't eat anything." And as she's doing this, she's making, you know, her lunch. She took out one of those disgusting, like, fat, frozen garlic toast things that they make in China and ship to us in the U.S. and call it garlic bread. We don't know what's in it. You know what I'm talking about? Those big, thick Texas garlic toasts that we like in America?
Okay. Oh, I haven't seen one, but it sounds like it's really yummy and incredibly bad for you.
Exactly. I mean, it's like immediately you eat one and you immediately get cancer, probably. I don't know. But so she took that out of the freezer, put it in the microwave, nuked it for 30 seconds.
Microwaving it as well. Jeepers creepers. The second you eat something like that, you know, a tumor will come out of your cheek or something like.
Yeah, this poor child is 6 years old. She, and listen to this. She did that, and then she put powdered sugar on top, cut it up into six small pieces, put it on a plate, and said, "Here you go, honey." As she's telling me, the doctor told her what the solution was, but she's, you know, too busy being mad at her husband and, you know, I don't know. So it's just sad. It's,
well, see, here's the thing. When you're poisoned, your ability to think gets diminished massively. So even when you're confronted by somebody like a doctor saying, "Hey, you can't do that anymore," your ability to think is so small that you think, "Well, he says that this will kill me, but I say that I can't be bothered thinking of something alternative that'll actually save my life. I'd rather die and kill my child while I'm at it."
Yeah, and it's just all. That's why the elite think that, you know, these people deserve what's coming to them. You know, we've given them all the rules. We've told them what to do. It's all out in the open. The, you know, everything's out in the open, but they're choosing not to look at solutions. So, you know, they deserve to get the rug pulled out from under them, you know, while they usher in Agenda 21 and whatever they're doing. So.
Well, you know, there is a lot to be said for that mentality, and I know some truthers who have started off on our side trying to do what's good for mankind, and then decided that mankind deserves what it's going to get. And I think one of the founding fathers, it might have been Thomas Jefferson, is that people get the government that they deserve. And I'm not sure if I align with that mentality, like, at all. I think it's more like getting what you deserve should be a positive thing, and getting what you deserve on a negative spectrum, a sort of thing. It's kind of like you're taking responsibility for punishing people for their inadequacies. And I don't think, unless there's a jury and a judge and some form of due process to arbitrarily judge people and believe that they should be exterminated for simply being ignorant, I don't think that the death penalty is an appropriate punishment for that kind of scumbaggery.
And that's why you are. That's why you're amazing. I mean, I absolutely. I agree. And that's. I mean, and so I get bummed out because I just feel like, oh my God, what can I do to help, you know, without, but I guess this, you know, this is what we can do. We can just, I don't know, sit around on radio stations from across the world and talk about it. But
With any problem, especially problems with relationships, as far as I found, the less you talk about it, the less gets resolved.
Okay. So let me ask you this. Do you think that you would be happy if you can just do a radio show, and like sing or, laugh and talk about something fun and,
I'm already doing it, Heather.
Okay, good. Yeah. Good. Yeah, see, you've transcended everybody else. You know what I mean? You're like way ahead of the game. And there are a lot of people that are waking up to this stuff that are not there yet, and it's so easy to get frustrated. But I'm talking to myself here. You know, we just all have to just keep remembering, be patient and kind. And I'm so in love with Suzanne Posel. She's right on the money with what she's doing.
Hands off though. David might get jealous.
Hey, I saw your tweet the other day about I'm for gay marriage. What did you say?
I'm actually wearing the shirt right now. It says, "I support gay marriage, but only if both chicks are hot."
Yeah, that's. I heard you guys talking about the IQ. I'm just wondering, not because it matters, but just I bet your IQ is like off the charts, like 180. Have you ever had your IQ tested?
I did back in the day. I think it was like 125 or something. It was just a little bit above average. My brother actually learned how to create IQ tests. And what's interesting is once you learn how to create IQ tests, you're not actually allowed to take another IQ test because you know how they work. Because you know how they work, and you can cheat on them.
There you go. And that's the problem with the accounting profession is. You know, I've always wondered, they make all these TV shows and movies about what goes on behind the scenes in law firms and in hospitals. You know what I mean? There's all these shows on TV all the time and movies about ER and emergency rooms and the drama.
Grey's Anatomy. See, before I watched it, I thought Grey's Anatomy was about alien autopsies.
I mean, there's no way your IQ is 125. I say 180. That IQ test was rigged.
Well, see, and again, it was taken a long time ago when I was a child, and this is long before I started learning about scumbaggery. And what's interesting, and I think Suzanne brought this up before you came on the show earlier today, is that IQs were actually a way of measuring the population's general intelligence for the benefit of eugenicists and eugenicists only. And I remember what was hanging up in the library of Waiheke High School, where I was, educated in the... I hate being educated. I love learning things, but I hate being educated. It said... Your I will is more important than your IQ.
There you go. That's beautiful. I love that. I absolutely love that. Oh, speaking of, Suzanne did a great article on the I think it's HR 748 with 18 to 25 year old U.S. American, basically, the young guys and girls maybe needing to serve the government from 18 to 25, like basically a forced military situation. I'm probably saying it wrong.
She was talking about that on the thing. It's like a modern new age Hitler youth sort of thing, except it's the Obama youth.
And the thing is, see, nobody can say anything about Obama. I mean, God, they planned this well in advance, I'm sure. Nobody can say anything about him because then they're going to be accused of being a racist. And that is a huge issue that I deal with every single day in my local community. I mean, there is seriously like a race war, and people are very invested in their race. And
oh yeah, it's happening here too. No, nobody can say anything about anybody of any other race and not be called a racist. And that's what's interesting, is that racists are people who hate people of a different ethnicity, right? And attack them and call them names and things like that. And so how people protect others against quote-unquote racists is to call them racists and rednecks and do name-calling and to attack them all the time. You know better!
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. I mean, the universe really is holographic. I mean, it's a big, giant mirror, and we're just... Oh, are we going to break? Sorry.
Yeah, we are.
Okay.
Thank you for noticing. We'll be right back after this short commercial break, ladies and gentlemen, at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. Back in a minute. Unity, please don't
desert me. To fly to New Zealand by plane from New York City, it takes 22 hours. So from the Twin Cities, 19. I mean, I fly all the time, and 6 hours on a plane is like a lot, and 19 is wrong. And they distract you. They feed you, and then they feed you some more, and then they feed you. Give me a dessert. Give me a dessert. Give me a dessert. Have your dessert, you prick. Give me that dessert. Have a Bloody Mary. Yeah, give me a whiskey sour. Yeah, give me whatever you got. Just more liquor, more liquor, more liquor. And then when you're done, there's still 16 hours to go. You want to know what it's like? You can experience going to New Zealand. It's very simple. Sit in a chair for 19 hours. And take your hands and press your head as hard as you can. And don't stop. Don't stop! 19 hours, just like this. And then at the end of 19 hours, you pull your hands off and you feel like you're in New Zealand. You certainly won't feel like you're home. They say that New Zealand's beautiful. And I don't know, because by the time I got over the jet lag, I had to go. And it seems to me, if you're going to travel for 19 hours to another country, when you get there, they should have the common courtesy to speak another language. I did not fly all this way to hear English again.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from New Zealand in English. And my very special guest is Heather, who's I guess she is a creative accountant, doesn't she? Heather, welcome back.
Hi. Hey.
Where would you like to take it from here?
Oh, well, I have a question for you, actually. Do you remember Bill Brockbrader? You interviewed him, like, a year ago. Do you remember?
It doesn't ring a bell, honestly. I interview so many people every week.
I know. Bill Brockbrader is a very brave Navy SEAL. Who basically came out and said, "Hey, look, we created the problems in Iraq in the 90s. you guys talked about it with reference to he allegedly belonged to SEAL Team 9.
Oh, what you mean? You mean Bill Wood?
Well.
That's what he was going by when he came on my show. It was exposing the SEAL Team 6 debacle, wasn't it?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Now I remember.
Okay. So have you heard from him, or because you know he was thrown in jail? Did you know that?
Yeah. I heard that.
Okay. So do you have an update or no? You don't know.
No. Unfortunately, not.
Okay. Well, if for some reason Bill is listening, much love to you, Bill, because you're another one who has utmost integrity, and you basically came out and you exposed yourself. You told the truth. You said, "Hey, look, I slept with a 16-year-old girl, and they basically threw it back in my face when I, you know, stood up to the government and put me in jail for it."
See, the key part of the word integrity is gritty.
Huh.
Don't you think?
Yeah.
If you're willing to go into the nitty gritty and get down to it.
There you go. Yes. I love it. There are so many, brave men in the military who've come forward and, said, I'm not doing this anymore. And, they've gotten suicided, whatever, car accidented, jailed. I just feel so lucky and blessed to, every day wake up every morning and see my son's face and, have such a loving husband, supportive husband who, is good to me and while these brave people are being suicided every day, everyone, if, living or dead or whatever, if you can hear me, thank you. Cause we wouldn't be where we are without you. So don't you think, Vinny?
Well, there's this old saying that the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. The problem is it's not for the many to decide. It's for the few to decide whether or not they want to sacrifice themselves for the many. And some others believe it's the opposite way around, that nobody really has any value except but to the many, and they should be sent off to die and be sacrificed as lambs on the altar of satanic scumbaggery for some reason.
Right.
And again, that doesn't wash with me, man. That is not the way to do it. Unless people have really individual freedom and the choice to stand up on their own two feet and what have you, they don't really deserve any credit for dying for it. And what happens is, in our society, is that, especially in institutionalized environments such as law school, med school, boot camp, things like that, they attempt to whittle away your individuality so that your ability to think by yourself and not think as part of the group is almost sandpapered away to virtually nothing. And those who can really go through that process and come out on the other side still a thinking individual person and still do the right thing, regardless of the consequences to themselves, it speaks very well of the human race as a whole. And it is these people I hold in high regard myself. They've sacrificed much more than I am personally willing to. Honestly, they're better men than me.
No, well, that's not true. I mean, you're very brave too, and you're extremely important in the truth movement. You need to give yourself a little more credit. Hey, by the way, that video you did on explaining Israel and Palestine and Zionism and Holocaust, and where you were like, oh, the Holocaust, oh, that, you know which video I'm talking about?
Is it the one with Len Horowitz and Sherry Kane and Nigel?
No.
The recent one?
Well, I don't know, but it was a really cleverly quick way to basically explain the whole reason why nobody can say, the Jewish, the Zionists, they're because, they can always throw out the Holocaust card. Whichever video it was, it was brilliant. But I saw an article today about, and this was like on MSN, like mainstream media, just announcing it, just brazen, just let's just tell you what really happened in history. We lied to you. This was like on the front page of, I think MSNBC or something about, Nat Butler, a slave master in the 1800s or whatever, or 1700s or 1800s, a slave master who himself was black. and that there were many slave masters that were actually black who sold and, bartered using you know, black Americans. So I guess what I'm saying is, you know, they've probably set it up so that the slavery card can always be used, and that's what's being used now, today. That's what we're witnessing, right?
Yeah. Well, I think the key is to not get emotional about issues as well, because I find that basically once you start yelling and screaming and getting incensed and inflamed over particular issues, that's when you've lost your fact and reason-based footing, which is the only way I feel that you can factually and chronologically win any form of argument. So if you're going to throw out demonization terms, insults, things like that, in order to discredit somebody else's information, it just means that you ain't got really information of your own to back it up, and that's you don't exactly fully understand right. What you're talking about.
That's exactly right. See, you're so way ahead of the game. There's all this infighting within the truth movement, and I mean amongst just like the average people in the truth movement. You know, there's just so much ego, and there's just so much. Coming into this
line of work, you take your old lines of work with you. You know, wherever you've been, there you are again, sort of thing.
Yeah.
And people don't know the difference, I don't think, between being an honest person with integrity working for a slave master doing evil things, and being an honest person with integrity working for yourself and doing the right thing. I don't think they understand the difference fully.
Yes, yes. Hey, Vinny, is it okay if I cut out a couple of minutes early? You can. I'm sure
we've got about a minute 45 on the broadcast left.
Oh, really? Oh, I'm like.
So if you want to cut out early, you got it.
Okay. Thank you so much for having me on. I think my family needs me now. Much love to you and yours and everyone. Be safe. Bye.
Before you go, is there a website or something like that where you've disclosed this information, or is this basically it and you want to remain secret, like squirrel?
Yes.
All right. Heather the Secret Squirrel, fare thee well, attend to your family and your flock and whatnot. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. All right. Well, there she goes. And there we are. Right on the break time, ladies and gentlemen. It's been a very good show today. It has indeed. And you know, also, I understand that basically if you keep talking about infighting and doing infighting all the time, suddenly your listeners don't want to listen to you anymore. And then because you've engaged in the infighting, you're suddenly fighting against yourself and defeating yourself quite succinctly while you're at it. That's why I don't want to mention no names. I don't want to do it. But sometimes you just can't help yourself. You know, sometimes when somebody does something really nasty or whatever, you just get kind of angry and you can't stop yourself from saying what you feel and what you want and what you want and what you want to do. And yet you have to, for the greater good of yourself and for everybody else. It ain't a lie. It's a white lie. We'll be right back.